Welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Ride the Rails with Andy B. I'm joined by Mark Smith, the man in seat 61. And on this episode, we are chatting scenic rides in Europe. This episode is sponsored by TaylorMadeRail.com. Welcome on board, Mark.
Hello, Andy.
So, scenic rides in Europe, where do we start? There's so many of
them.
The
best of the best. Well, yes, there are. How about Switzerland?
Okay, yep. Switzerland is the obvious choice, of course, because it's got so many great lines. But sometimes I do think lots of other countries are overlooked for Switzerland, and there's some Swiss type scenery in other countries, which we'll come on to later. But Switzerland, what would you say your favorite ride is in Switzerland?
Well, you know what I'm going to say here. It's the Bernina route. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, it's a narrow gauge route that links Chur, just south of Zurich, with Tirano, which is just over the border in Italy. It's an incredible route with mountains, viaducts. I mean, it's got the whole lot. You will climb up to 2,000 or 3,000 meters. It's got an incredible number of bridges, tunnels, and all sorts, and some highlights such as the Landwasser Viaduct and the Brucio Spiral. And it's also a great way of getting from Zurich to Italy, even if you're heading to Florence and Rome and Venice, because it's got an Italian regional connection from Tirano to Milan. And I think it's a great shame that the Ratisbahn, who run the Bernina route, don't make more of that Italian connection.
The Italian connection in itself is a really scenic journey, going along the shores of Lake Como.
So it did. And the last time I did it, it was an older unit with windows that open, and you can get some good shots of the lake if the weather's nice.
Yeah, the shame is they're slowly but surely replacing with air-conditioned trains on that route. But the Ratisbahn get it right. The new trains are air-conditioned, but some of the windows open. So it's a perfect combination.
And I know what you're going to say here. This is the age-old debate on the Bernina line. Do you travel in those wonderful panoramic coaches with the wraparound windows, so glassed in, very comfortable, it gives you a sense of occasion, or do you travel in the unit up front with the ordinary seats that aren't reserved, that's pulling the panoramic train, but where you can actually open the windows and stick your camera out? Actually, I think there's a compromise, because in the baggage area of the panoramic coaches, there is a small window which does actually open, and you can stick your camera or video camera or phone out of that window and get some good shots without any reflection.
So you pay a supplement to ride in the baggage car?
Well, Mrs. 61 and the little 61s travel in the luxury of the panorama car, whilst I nip to the baggage thing if something, a nice view's coming up to get the shots.
Right. One of the other things about the new trains that they introduced, the electric multiple units, you can sit behind the driver. So if you're lucky, one end is first class, one end is second class. The drivers tend not to pull the blinds down during the day. So you've probably got the best seats in the house, even better than the panorama cars, because you're right behind the driver. Have you experienced one of those yet?
No, I've always been in the panorama coaches, but I have seen video of going over the Landwasser Viaduct, sitting in the front, looking past the driver. And that is probably the best view of that viaduct you're ever going to get, actually the driver's view.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, just talking of drivers, a quick shout out. There's a very good guy on Twitter who's a driver for the Ratisbahn who posts some incredible videos. I just can't remember his Twitter name at the moment.
Fabio. Search for Fabio on Twitter. It was incredibly painful during lockdown to see such fabulous pictures of places we couldn't go. But he's quite a photographer as well as a train driver.
I was very tempted to block him during lockdown because I was getting so jealous. And he gets paid to do it as well. That's his job. Just phenomenal. So yeah, highly recommend his Twitter feed. The You mentioned Turano, which is the border station between Switzerland and Italy. I've a couple of times spent an overnight in Turano. It's quite a pleasant little town, and it has some things to do. There's the Palazzo Sassi, I think it's Palazzo Sassi, which is a really nice place to visit. And also, it really is a nice point to break the journey. If you're doing the Bernina Express coming down from the north, Mark will just enlighten us, hopefully, on the tip to get a cheap ticket. But coming down from Germany, by the time you've got down to Toronto, you could have been traveling 7 hours, even 8 hours. So it's a nice time to break the journey, and then continue on to Milan the next day, which takes around 2.5 hours.
It's about 50, I think, something like that.
Okay, right. But Mark, can you just enlighten us on the
The
roughish
special
about?
deal. Well,
Yes.
the normal Swiss fare from Zurich to Tirano is about 80, the equivalent of about 80, 85 euros, and that's a full flex ticket because the Swiss don't really go in for advance purchase. But the Germans do offer cheap advance purchase fares from German stations to Swiss stations, and you can buy an advance purchase ticket from Singen, which is the last major station in Germany, to Tirano from as little as 29.90 euros. So if you buy one of those and simply don't use the Singen to Zurich bit, you can travel from Zurich to Tirano for 29.90 euros instead of paying 80 euros, as long as you're sure of your date and departure, which is quite a saving.
Yeah, most definitely. Plus, as well, the continental stations don't have ticket barriers for going in and out. So it is actually a quite a legitimate way of buying a ticket for that journey. You just don't travel
Well,
on that
I
first
think
portion.
we need to distinguish between something you can get away with because there's no ticket barriers, and something that even if there were ticket barriers is perfectly legitimate. And although there are rules in Britain about travelling short with an advance ticket, there are no rules like that on the continent. So it's perfectly legitimate to pay for Singen to Tirano and only use the Zurich to Tirano portion.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the Toronto to Milan, I think, is around about 15 euros on
Yeah,
top of
much less
that.
than that. It's about 11.50, I think.
Right. They did use swap rate first class as well on that route. Don't know if they bother anymore because it was so widely abused. I think first may have been the 15 euro fare. What another trip I did kind of in that part of Switzerland with Ratisbon, from Turano, I took the bus across to Lugano. Palm Express, maybe they call that bus going across. Would that have been from Turano, or would that have been for? No, it was from Turano, and it was spectacular, absolutely spectacular. Even though I'm not particularly a big fan of traveling on coaches, that one is well worth doing. So again, if you're based in Switzerland and you don't want to repeat the Bernina Express coming back, you could always then take the bus across to Lugano and then come back up on the Gotthard line. So that makes a nice triangular journey.
I think one thing we should say about Swiss scenic routes is you actually need to do them twice because they're completely different experiences in summer compared to winter. Because in winter it looks windswept, bleak. It's Narnia in Switzerland in the depths of winter. But then you come back in summer and do it, and it's all neatly cut meadows, very, very pristine, and a completely different experience. So yeah, doing these routes, these fabulous routes once is just not enough.
Yeah, and the same with the Glacier Express as well. The summer and winter experience are so different. What I love on those trains in the winter, because they are trains that everyday people use. So you'll stop in the middle of absolutely nowhere in Switzerland, snow everywhere, and you get skiers and snowboarders getting on board, going one stop, and then getting off again. And it's just I find that just such a cool thing. And I like to see that the trains are used kind of by by local people, that it isn't just a tourist trap, which, again, if you're in those panorama cars, it is a tourist experience rather than a travelling experience. Don't know if, what your views are on that.
Well, I think the panorama cars give a sense of occasion, a sense of specialness. It's like travelling on an intercity train on a local train route.
Yes, yeah.
Intercity okay. ambience, if you like. Yeah. And of course, on the Glacier Express, which we should tell everyone that it runs from Zermatt in the west of Switzerland to Samaritz in the east, and sometimes billed as the slowest express in the world. I mean, it's, what is it, 7 hours to do how many miles? 180? It's not that far in the grand scheme of things. It's got a new excellence class, which puts it into a completely different sort of cruise train category. 1+1 seating across the width of the car, reclining leather seats and all meals and drinks included. So that's obviously aimed at the tourist market, but you can travel on the same train for a fraction of the price in the or cheap seats.
And if Glacier Express are listening, neither Mark or myself have sampled Excellence Class. So we'd love to get over there.
A good point, Andy. Very good point. Yeah, we should really try that for ourselves.
Indeed. I'd also say in Switzerland, there's some areas which are a little less traveled, should I say, by rail. International rail travels. So in the north of Switzerland, the Jura Mountains area. Again, some fabulous scenery up there. And also an interesting way, I think, to get into Switzerland from France is to travel from Bellegarde, I think it is. And then there's a regional train goes to La Chaux-de-Fonds, and then you pick up the Swiss train. Again, just superb scenery. Very few travellers on the international train. So you really are doing something different away from the crowds. I don't know if that's a line that you've had the opportunity as yet to travel on down there.
No, I haven't. I thought you were going to mention the line through Chamonix, from Saint-Gervais through Chamonix on the narrow gauge through to Martigny, where it meets the Geneva-Lausanne to Brieg line. That's a wonderful route. And of course, Chamonix is a lovely place to stop off.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think you could quite easily spend a month in Switzerland and still not be bored of riding trains.
No, I certainly could. Chance would be a fine thing.
Yeah, indeed. In Switzerland, there's been the new tunnels that they opened in the Lochberg and Gotthard means that north-south travel in Switzerland for the intercity trains is now quick because it goes through the tunnels under the mountains, but the old lines are still in existence. So a lot of people do overlook the fact that you could get from Zurich to Milan by going over the Gotthard Pass. That comes down to not having the knowledge of the train services, be it through the online systems and unticking fastest connection, or using the European timetable. As we mentioned last week, the European timetable is great for inspiration. On C61, are you giving any tips about going up over the top as opposed to underneath?
You know, this is quite tricky because the fast bullet-nosed Eurocity trains from Zurich to Milan now only take 3 hours, 17 minutes. And it's still a lovely scenic journey with some great mountain views and some spectacular lake scenery. But of course, what used to be the most scenic hour going right over the top through the Gotthard Pass itself is now 20 minutes at 125 miles an hour and a nice fast line through the Gotthard Base Tunnel. And I think the answer here is that if you don't know what you're missing, you'd think it was a great route. But for those of us who used to travel over the top the old way, we know what we're missing. Yep. The problem is, of course, that you've got cheap fares from Zurich to Milan from €29 on the through train. As soon as you need to go over the top, you need to change trains. You need to pay for a full flex ticket, which is back to €80. So it's not just the time factor and the change of train factor that dissuades you from going over the top. It's the price factor. You can't get the cheap deals to go over the top, which is a bit of a shame. but at least you still can go over the top if you want to, or if you've got a rail pass, for example.
It's rail pass territory, isn't it, to do that journey up over the top?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a couple of useful connections in a morning from Milan that run all the way through to Erstfeld, which is on the north side beyond the mountains. So that you don't need to change trains. It's a comfortable train as well. So it takes you all the way from Milan to the north of the mountains. So that's one train that I would recommend. And again, when I've done it a couple of times, very lightly used. I've traveled up from Salerno on the sleeper to Milan, grabbed my cappuccino and a brioche, and then taken the slow train from Milan over the mountains. That is a brilliant combination, as you can imagine. Mark, moving on from Switzerland, there's so much more we could say on Switzerland, and I think that actually would justify an episode in itself in a future series. I'd say one underrated country for scenic railways is Spain. I reckon 80% of Spanish train journeys are through fantastic scenery, and the other 20% is acceptable scenery. And even the high-speed trains, okay, they go through a lot of tunnels, but still you get some tremendous views off them.
That's true, actually. The high-speed line from Madrid to Seville is one of the most scenic high-speed lines in Europe, and it's because of that succession of viaduct and valley, then tunnel, then another viaduct and valley. You actually get a good view of the mountains. It's one of the few high-speed lines that goes straight through the middle of the mountains rather than trying to get around the outside. But yes, Spain is a fantastic place to visit by train. One of my favourites is heading for Gibraltar and even Morocco on the line from Madrid to Algeciras. That's the big city across the bay from Gibraltar. The last little bit from Ronda down to Algeciras, in fact, from Cordoba to Algeciras, is lovely. Not very fast, of course, because you're twisting and turning through a mountainous river valley, but absolutely fantastic.
And one tip on that, if you do get the chance to spend a couple of hours or 3 hours in Ronda, so a beautiful town and a fantastic place just to break your journey. Mark, I think it's time we just took a quick break for a quick word from our sponsors, TaylorMadeRail.com. So see you after the break. Season 2 of Ride the Rails is sponsored by TaylorMade Rail, the train holiday specialist. They offer flight-free, independent holidays with the mission to simplify the complexities of rail travel to create sustainable and civilized holidays across the European continent. No itinerary is too intricate for them, thanks to their years of experience in the rail holiday business. Some of their most popular itineraries are in Switzerland, including the famous Glacier Express and Jungfrau Mountain Railway. Traveling to Italy via the Alps is also another popular option. They feature longer haul rail adventures, such as London to Istanbul, traveling north to the Arctic Circle, south to Morocco, and east to Russia. Not forgetting the UK holidays, an area that has seen significant levels of interest for 2021 travels. They have a high level of repeat customers thanks to their great service, clear layout of documentation, and reassuring in-trip support in the event of any hitches. They receive consistently excellent reviews on FIFO, the independent review site, where their average score is 4.8 out of 5. A testament to their customer-centric focus and product choices. TaylorMadeRail.com. Welcome back to episode 2 of season 2 of Ride the Rails. Mark, we were just chatting about Spain before the break. Last year, well, actually 2 years ago now, how time flies, I had a wonderful couple of weeks traveling along the north coast of Spain with the FEVI narrow gauge network. Absolutely, again, stunning scenery. So you have the mountains behind you, you have the sea in front of you, beautiful little towns. And again, it's trains less traveled, I think is a good way to describe it. So a couple of the trains, I was the only person on them, which is not a good thing for the transport operators, of course, but as a passenger, absolutely brilliant. And then from the north coast, headed down to Vigo, which again, wonderful town, great seafood. And then around Vigo, there's quite a lot to do as well.
And of course, from Vigo, it's a short hop on the regional train to Porto.
Absolutely,
in
yes.
Portugal.
Yep.
And that's actually one of the places I still have to get to, particularly to see that wonderful station in Porto with the tile walls, Porto Sabento.
Sabento. Yeah. Sabento. Yeah. Back in the day, again, giving my age away, I remember when they were diesel locomotives pulling the trains out of São Bento, because it's quite a steep climb coming out. And that was a tremendous experience. These really loud, throbbing locomotives going through the tunnels. And if you're in the first carriage, you were deafened and shaken to smithereens. But what an experience. Of course, no, Portugal for this time in mid-May, we've just been mid-May 2021, we've just been told that we can travel there. British people are allowed to travel to Portugal, and they're going to welcome us with open arms. So I already have a trip planned. So get in there straight away. Another mention for Portugal and Spain. The other link between the two countries is via the border town Badajoz. So you can travel from Madrid to Lisbon in a day. It takes 12 hours with a change in Badajoz and Entrecomento. But the scenery, yet again, is stunning. I'd say you see four types of scenery. There's a desert scenery with tumbleweed. There's some scenery like the Lake District. Then you have river valley journeys. And then you have some agricultural with lots of olive trees. So really nice journey, very, very diverse. And of course, that's pretty much the only way you can get from Madrid to Portugal these days.
That's a bit of an unfortunate point, but yes, it's true. It's a great shame, actually. I can remember travelling on the original night train between the original Lusitania Express from Madrid to Lisbon, and you actually got some great river scenery in the morning approaching Lisbon, even on that route. So it's just such a shame that you can't experience the scenery and have the convenience of a direct overnight train anymore.
Yeah, there's... It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Portugal, because I have heard rumour that the Portuguese government were keen to maintain a link through Spain to the French border. I don't know if you've had any updates on that.
Nothing yet. It's all bubbling along below the surface, I think. I don't think this issue has finally been settled.
Yeah.
So we wait with bated breath.
It's quite ironic in the European year of rail. There's lots of European countries where you can't get between anymore.
Well, Portugal, it's a whole country that's going to be virtually cut off, apart from a local service, Porto Vigo, and a one-car 1950s unit across the border to Badajoz. Great
yeah.
shame.
Yeah. It's great for a retro experience, though. I think as a slow traveller, brilliant, but for any modal shift from flying, it's a bit of a no-no. Moving over to the east of Europe, one country I've explored quite a bit on the train is Slovakia. Slovakia is a bit of a hidden gem when it comes to train journeys. You've got the Tatra Mountains with the Tatra Mountain Railway there, but also down in the south of the country, wending your way across from Kosice to Bratislava through the south of Slovakia, some wonderful scenery, almost Swiss-like. But Switzerland probably about a fifth of the cost. So that's a big advantage of Slovakia. And then if you head further east, you've got one of the most amazing trips in Europe. It's just the way to describe it. And I know when you did it, Mark, you even beat me with doing it in style, the Belgrade to Bar journey.
Very privileged to have gone Belgrade to Bar on former President Tito's special personal train, complete with conference car, which we all sat in for most of the day. Yep, so it was a fantastic experience. I came back on the scheduled train, which costs all of €20, unless you can find a cheap deal. Sometimes they have a €9 deal available. So a full day's train ride for €9, I mean, or even €20 on one of Europe's most spectacular routes. And these are really seriously high mountains. And rather than just snaking along the bottom, rather like the Bernina route, this railway climbs the mountains and you're right up in the close towards the peaks, you know, halfway up the mountainside, looking at down these valleys thousands of feet below. Quite spectacular.
And there's a famous bridge there, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's
Rijeka Viaduct. Yes. Mala Rijeka, that's the one. It was the tallest railway bridge in the world until they built a higher one somewhere in China, I think it is. And of course, there's now an even higher one being built in India, in Kashmir. But I think they rebranded it the tallest viaduct in Europe, in the world, because if you make that subtle distinction, it's still the world's highest. But anyway, it's a spectacular bridge. And the railway curves right round the valley when you've done the bridge, so you get a view across the valley of the bridge that you've just gone over, which is always good for a photo opportunity.
And if you take the Serbian train, it's with windows coming down, whereas the Montenegrin train is more modern with air-conditioned cars.
I believe so. I had the Serbian train, so the windows opened, which was fantastic. But the Montenegrin kit is definitely a little bit more modern and better kept. But even if you take the sleeper on this route, in certain times of year, it'll be daylight at the southern end of the route. And that's where the majority of the mountain scenery is. So even taking the sleeper can be a scenic experience on this route.
And just a word of warning on that route, 2-hour delays are not uncommon. So in fact, taking the sleeper could be your best bet, because if you're 2 hours delayed, you're guaranteed to get the scenery. Those train journeys in the Balkans, I never understand why the timetables are actually never cast to reflect actually how long the journey really will be. Have you been on on-time train in the Balkans?
Oh, for heaven's sake, no. Yeah. Of course not. When that train left Istanbul, you knew it would be 2 hours late into Bucharest before it left Istanbul. But there you go. But I think that there has been a lot of the track in the Balkans isn't what it used to be, even 30 years ago. And I think that is behind a lot of the delays. Not that it ran on time 30 years ago, of course.
I wonder if it's a sense of pride that they don't want to publish a timetable that has an extended journey time, but they're happy to have the trains running late. Who knows?
Oh, I don't know. Of course, it's also the borders as well. Border controls in Balkan countries always take longer than the railways planned.
Yeah, that is very true. Just moving a little closer to home. A couple of journeys that I think are great to travel on, and I will always go out of the way to travel on them. One is riding down the Rhine Valley in Germany, and the other one's running along the Moselle Valley on the Luxembourg-Trier-Koblenz line. The Rhine Valley first. Anybody traveling south through Germany, between Cologne and the Frankfurt area, there's a high-speed route which takes an hour. Brilliant, really fast, fantastic. Kind of scenic. A few things to see. But then you have the Rhine Valley, which takes what's the Rhine Valley these days? Is it 2.5 hours?
Well, it takes an extra hour compared to using the high-speed line between Cologne and Frankfurt. So if you've got an extra hour to spare and aren't in a hurry, it's a great alternative to the normal fast to the high-speed route that the booking systems will normally send you down.
And a couple of tips for that line. I'll give you my tip and then see if Mark can come up with a tip as well. For my tip, traveling in first class on a German intercity train that has a buffet. They use carriages which have windows which open. The rest of the train is air conditioned, but there's half a carriage of first class seats next to the buffet with windows that open. So perfect for taking those pictures on the journey. And Mark, what's your favorite tip on that line?
Well, there is one train that uses Swiss rolling stock with one of those fantastic first-class Swiss panorama cars. What? So for the price of an ordinary first-class ticket, and using the advice on my site about choosing the right car to book a seat in, you can travel in this glassed-in observation carriage all the way down the Rhine Valley, past the vineyards and the castles and the Lorelei Rock of legend, in spacious comfort with fantastic view.
And just next door to that panorama car, there's a Swiss dining car. So you can also enjoy lunch on the move. And in fact, if you weren't in first class, you could sit in the dining car and get excellent views and be served food at your seat.
That's true. It's Eurocity 8 and Eurocity 9 that have this panorama car. And going southbound, it leaves Cologne at 10:53, bound for Basel and Zurich.
So if you're travelling from the UK, you'd probably have to have an overnight stop somewhere en route to pick up that train.
Yeah, have an overnight stop in Cologne, a nice lie-in and a leisurely breakfast, and then pick up the 10:53 going south.
And of course, that one goes through to Zurich, where you could then change for a train to Chur, quite a nice scenic journey, have an overnight, and pick up the Bernina Express. So that really is a scenic way to get down to Italy. The Rhine Valley, Switzerland, Lake Como. I wonder on those journeys, how many passengers are seat 61ers doing these secondary scenic lines? I know when I've traveled in the Czech Republic, traveling via Heb, which is Mark's, I was going to say infamous, but actually famous via Heb fare. If you find any non-locals on the train, they'll be on there because of Mark.
And it's a special cheap route, isn't it? The Czech railways do cheap fares via that route, but you have to be clever and put Heb in the via box, otherwise they don't show up.
Yeah. Actually, that in itself is quite a reasonable ride, isn't it, in terms of scenery?
It's not bad. It's very pleasant indeed.
Hmm. Yeah. Then another line, which, say, is another hidden gem, if I may say that, is the one going along the Mosel Valley from Luxembourg through Trier and on to Koblenz.
That's a lovely route. The Mosel is just as lovely as the Rhine. And if you're heading from Germany to Luxembourg, that's the main line.
When I was running the tour operator rail bookers, we often did secondary routes. And I know our friends at TaylorMade Rail are very keen on promoting these secondary routes. And Trier itself is well worth a visit. It's an old Roman city with some preserved Roman architecture. And a nice break of journey from London. So you can get to Trier early evening from London, traveling down from Brussels to Luxembourg, which yet again is another scenic ride, and then on to Trier, and then following day to Koblenz. And then you could pick up the Rhine Valley from Koblenz south. So we've basically, you know, Mark, got London to Italy, where 80% of the journey is scenic journey, which is incredible.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a great route. The great thing about the Rhine Valley, of course, is you don't have to sacrifice comfort because intercity and even intercity express high-speed trains do operate that way. It's not like the Gotthard route where all the fast trains now operate solely on the high-speed route.
As I say, the ICE train route from Cologne to Frankfurt just takes under an hour. It's an interesting journey. You can be lucky and get behind the driver on the ICE3 trains where you can see in front of you because the passenger cabin is right behind the driver. So you get some great views on that and you get an appreciation of the speed. Is that a 300 kilometre or 320 kilometre along that stretch?
I think it's 300, but I could be wrong.
But you really get to feel the speed if you wanted to do that one way and then do a nice, relaxed, slow journey on the return. In booking systems, you do have to be quite creative to be able to take advantage of the Rhine Valley. And I know on seat 61, Mark explains how to get yourself on the slow train rather than the fast train.
Yeah, if you're using the German system, which you usually will be for booking from Amsterdam, Brussels or Cologne south, just click the via button and put Koblenz in the via box, because any train that goes through Koblenz is going to be going down the Rhine Valley, not the high speed route.
And is there a difference in price if you kind of go take the slower route? Or are they the same prices?
Well, the fares are yield managed, so they vary according to demand. You could well find it slightly cheaper to go down the Rhine Valley as well, although the range of prices is the same.
Right. And are there any tricks? Can you get to Tirano via the Bernina from as far north as Cologne? You know, with those special low fares.
Right. Well, you could put Brussels to Tirano into the German Railways website, bahn.de. You couldn't do it. You'd need an overnight stop. So you'd click add intermediate stops, stick in a stop in Zurich, add a stopover duration of 12 hours or whatever you feel like. And yes, it would in theory then book a Brussels to Tirano trip with an overnight stop using the Bernina route from, in principle, €39.90.
Blimey.
you probably won't get the 39 rate. I mean, it might be 49, 59, 69, but still quite a bargain and all on one through ticket.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And Mark, I think without you being in existence, so to speak, all these amazing fares just wouldn't be in front of the eyes of the travellers. So I thank you very much for your service, Mark.
Thank you, Andy.
I think that's a good place to end this episode. As always, there's lots more we could have spoken about. Brasov to Bucharest, Paris, Nice, Paris, Barcelona. But we'll save those for another time. And Mark, thank you very much for your time. And we'll see you for the next episode.
Until next time.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Bye.